Graphic Audio, a movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents the Nuclear Bombshell Series by John Zakur and Lawrence Ganim. Narrated by Richard Rowan. With performances by David Coyne, Elizabeth Jernigan, Danny Gavigan, Nanette Savard, Colleen Delaney, Ken Jackson, Christopher Graybill, Jeff Baker, Bradley Smith, Eric Messner, Tim Getman, Gary Tells, Evan Casey, Alyssa Wilmoth, Elliot Dash, Ren Casey, and Mort Shelby. The Doomsday Brunette.
It was a dark and stormy night, which is the way these things often begin. I didn't mind, since I was sleeping, and I find darkness and the rain falling on the roof of my house both very conducive to sleep. So, while I may not have been sleeping like a baby without a care in the world, I was sleeping soundly, or at least as soundly as one can sleep when you're the last freelance PI in the world. Sure, my house has all the latest Sub-Zero defense systems, but I've still learned to sleep, if not with one eye open, with one eye ready to open at a nano's notice. After all, when you make it your business poking around into other people's or creatures' business, you never know when someone or something is going to try to give you the business. My name is Zachary Nixon Johnson. The year is 2058, and Earth is enjoying a very welcome and much-needed period of calm. We've had enough political strife, environmental cataclysms, extraterrestrial catastrophes, and teenage pop sensations to last us for the rest of the century. Still, even in the best of times, there are always the worst of people. There's something about human nature that makes it so that no matter how good somebody has it, they always get jealous when someone else has it better. Ah, but I digress. As mentioned, I was sleeping. My fiancé Electra was beside me, wrapped tightly in her and most of my share of the bed covers.
Boss.
I rolled over, only just beginning to recognize the voice in my head as that of my computer assistant, Harv.
Boss, wake up.
What is it, Harv?
You have an incoming vid call.
What time is it?
It's 0300 hours.
3 a.m.? Why would anybody call me at 3 a.m.? It's never good news at 3 a.m. Nobody ever calls to tell you you just won the lottery at 3 a.m.
Trust me, boss. You want to take this call.
Harv is one of the world's most advanced thinking machines. He is the creation of my brilliant and somewhat socially inept friend, Dr. Randy Poole. And for better or for worse, he is hardwired directly into my brain, thanks to an organic nano-interface implanted in my head. Through my left eye, if you can imagine. Don't ask. The upside of this is that I have instant and direct access to his knowledge and skills at all times. He can keep me continuously informed about pretty much anything and everything. The downside is that I can't turn him off, so he is a constant presence in my head, keeping me informed about pretty much anything and everything, whether I want to know it or not. As I've said, Harv can communicate with me silently, actually speaking inside my head, and I, when necessary, can communicate with him in the same manner, by focusing my thoughts very tightly. It's a little hard to focus tightly enough, though, so I don't talk to him that way very often. But I'm practicing the ability, and it's becoming a little easier over time.
Take a message.
I slid my head underneath the pillow.
Like you're supposed to.
This is a business call, boss.
Take a message.
It's an emergency.
Take a message.
I didn't just roll off the assembly line. I know the procedure. A toaster would know the procedure. But
once
this...
more, then I'm getting my gun. Take a message.
I can't. Well, actually, I could, but then you'd just be all mad at me.
I'm already mad at you.
You'd be even madder.
Harv, I don't think I could get much madder.
You would if you missed this call from Ona Thompson.
The Ona Thompson?
I didn't ask if she was the Ona Thompson, so I can't be absolutely certain. But since there are no other people in any of my information bases with the name Ona Thompson, I would say yes, it is the Ona Thompson at the other end of this call. And I would imagine that she's getting angry at being kept waiting.
I'll take it in the office.
In the world of celebrity, there is superstar, there is icon, and there is legend. And then, there is Una Thompson. She is a pop culture force of nature. The El Niño of chic and the plate tectonics of hip. She's the irresistible force of vogue and the immovable object of cool, all rolled into one. And she was calling me. It's hard to properly describe Una Thompson. There's no easy place to start. But the most logical is with her father. Dr. David Thompson was the greatest scientist of the first half of the 21st century. In the early 2020s, his hundreds of technological discoveries and breakthroughs helped revolutionize the world and led to such modern-day conveniences as teleporters, hovercraft, and interplanetary travel, limited as it is, and such modern-day nuisances as energy weapons, genetic engineering, and the sentient pet rock. Yet despite all that, Dr. Thompson is best known for two very monumental creations, the first of which is his family. I'll get to the second a little later. And by the way, when I say family, I use the word in its broadest and most abstract sense. Dr. Thompson created four daughters, who are known today the world over as the Thompson Quads, or simply the Quads. They are the most famous living creatures on the planet and could quite possibly represent the next stage of human evolution. You'll note that I said that Thompson created his daughters, not had, raised, or fathered. That's not a mistake. Dr. Thompson used his brilliant mind and his well-funded laboratory to custom create his children. And what spectacular children they are. He began with his own DNA, brilliant but flawed, and then, strand by strand, almost molecule by molecule, altered it, supercharging every ability and repairing every blemish, until he surmised that it was perfect. Then he test-tubed it, added just a touch of supermodel, and over the next 2 years, simultaneously grew four genetically engineered female embryos into viable organisms. The girls were perfect and beautiful when they were birthed from their artificial wombs, although their skin tone, for some reason, turned out slightly purple, and they immediately became media sensations. Thompson named them Ona, Tua, Thria, and Fora. He was a brilliant man, but unfortunately had no imagination when it came to everyday things, and they grew up in the very bright spotlight of the public eye. When the girls hit puberty, and they hit it in a big way, blossoming into super-powerful, genius-level, and stunningly beautiful teenagers, they became full-fledged sex symbols. They could bend steel with their hands, stop traffic with their looks, and the public simply couldn't get enough of them. As they grew, each quad developed their own personality and distinctive style, and this made them even more sensational to a public that already adored them. Unfortunately, it also made the family a little more dysfunctional. Ona became a billionaire playgirl and dilettante. Tua became a superhero, I'm not joking. Thria became a fairy princess, really, I'm not joking. And Fora became a nihilist goth punk anarchist. And you know your family's in trouble when the nihilist is considered the normal one. So here they were, four identical sisters, world famous since before they were born, universally loved and adored by the public, and exponentially superior to normal humans both physically and intellectually. Is it any wonder that they all turned out to be super brats? Short tempers, zero patience, and egos the size of Uranus. The Quads had it all. They were adored by the human race, but had long since grown weary of humanity. They were still celebrities, entertainers in their own distinctive ways, but you couldn't help feeling sad over the wasted potential. The Quads were meant to be the apex of humanity, the pinnacle of human achievement. They had instead become the poster children for bored chic, the pop culture icons of purposelessness. And, for reasons that will be explained later, they all hated one another, which just made things more interesting. I took a few nanos to collect myself before answering the call in my home office. I don't usually get starstruck, but I was a little edgy at the prospect of talking to the world's most powerful and egotistical woman with my brain still half asleep.
You're nervous, I can tell.
Me? Nah, I just want to make a good impression. Do I look awkward here?
You mean sitting at your desk at 3 a.m. for no good reason? The woman has an IQ that's off the charts. Don't you think she's going to know that you were sleeping when she called?
Humor me here, Harv. It's all in the presentation.
I think you should lose the fedora.
What do you know? You don't even have a real head.
Not true. In the perceptual world, my head is every bit as real as yours. It is just composed of light molecules instead of constantly decaying organic matter. In fact, I am just as real as you.
I ignored him. I took a beat to gather myself and stabbed the receive button on the VidNet console. Ona Thompson's face flashed on the wall screen, and her beauty hit me like a pheromonal tsunami. I'd seen her before, of course, in pictures and on the news and such, but never in so vibrant and realistic a form. Her face was perfectly sculpted, from the soft lines of her cheeks to the gentle slope of her nose. Her eyes were wide and a deep shade of warm chocolate brown. Her lips were full and luscious, like ripe berries, two shades darker than the creamy purple of her skin. I was thankful that Electra wasn't in the room with me, because I'm sure I looked like a lovesick schoolboy. It was embarrassing enough that Hart was there to witness it.
Good evening, Ms. Thompson. Zach Johnson here. How can I help you?
That's what I wanted to say. Unfortunately, I didn't get the chance. The nano the vid screen came on, she started.
Well, it's about time. Is this how you treat your clients? If it is, then I should have my head examined for netting. I could get faster service at the DMV.
Thank you, Ms. Thompson. What can I do for you?
You can cut the small talk for one. I have zero tolerance for it this time of night.
All I said was...
And I need you to come to my mansion right away. How quickly can you get here?
Excuse me?
Never mind. I'll send a hover jet. It will be faster. Unless you have a teleport pad in your home. No, of course you wouldn't. You're poor.
She's not one for foreplay, is she?
Miss Thompson, what's this about?
I thought we agreed that you'd stop the small talk. Do you have a nicer jacket than that one? And take off that hideous hat. You look like a twice-cloned organ grinder.
Uh-oh.
That did it. I stabbed the disconnect button. No one insults the fedora.
I told you not to wear it.
I stared at the screen, still a little shell-shocked. Do you think she's always like that?
I understand she's quite pleasant for 4 or 5 minutes while she's sleeping. That would be Ms. Thompson calling back.
Gee, you think?
Shall I answer it while you attain more suitable cranial attire? Perhaps the beanie with the propeller?
I put the call on the screen myself, but I took the fedora off before doing so.
Did you just hang up on me?
I was just about to ask you the same thing. There must be a glitch somewhere in the connection. Computers... Can't live without them, can't disconnect them.
I could tell she wasn't buying it, but luckily she wasn't comfortable enough yet in our relationship to call me a liar. For the first time, I saw traces of concern in her expression, a tiny bit of confusion, and maybe even a little fear.
Fine. Where were we?
You were politely asking for my help.
Yes, that's right. I need you to come to my mansion immediately. I'll send a hover jet, and you'll need a better-looking jacket.
Let's not start that again, Miss Thompson. What's going on?
I can't say. Not over the net. But I'll hire you. I'll pay whatever you like. This is an emergency, Mr. Johnson. You must come immediately.
I have to admit the part about paying me whatever I wanted was tempting, as was the idea of working for someone of Ona Thompson's stature. And Gates knows I needed the credits. I always need the credits. Still, she had the look of trouble about her. 100% pure unfiltered menthol-flavored trouble. I'd had my share of that stuff in the past, and I'd sort of lost my taste for it. It doesn't matter how exciting or well-paying a job is if it kills you in the end.
I don't know what else to say, Mr. Johnson. Please?
Pop culture historians have since noted that Ona had used the word please only 6 times in her life prior to that nano.
It's very important.
Her lower lip trembled ever so slightly, and I saw her moisten it gently with her tongue, and softly bite it to steady herself. The simple gesture was quite possibly the sexiest thing I'd ever seen. I leaned back in my chair and gently squeezed the bridge of my nose between my thumb and forefinger, preparing for the many headaches that I knew would soon follow my next words. I can be there in an hour.
Excellent. I'm sending the hover jet right now.
Don't bother. I'll take my personal transportation.
I'll alert security to expect your arrival, Mr. Johnson.
Call me Zach.
Fine. Call me Ona. And again, I'm very grateful for your help.
I certainly think you made the right choice.
Time will tell.
This could be a great opportunity for you.
Provided, of course, that I survive.
Well, sure. If you want to get picky about it.
The drive to Ona's was going smoothly. Even if it wasn't the middle of the night, the road still wouldn't have been crowded because these days most of the hurried general populace prefer to travel by hovercraft for short trips. I, being a bit of a romantic, still prefer to travel like my ancestors, by car. I own a couple of fine antique cars that date back to the days when cars still ran on fossil fuel. I love those machines, but they're expensive to operate. And as Harb revels in pointing out, they make me about as inconspicuous as him at a Pong convention. Since the key to being a good PI is being as inconspicuous as possible, while I'm on my cases, I generally drive my X-Shell Model T-2000. Harv appeared in the seat next to me, projecting himself from my wrist communicator. Suddenly, seemingly out of nowhere, an old lady appeared on the street right in front of us. I jammed on the brakes, bringing my car to a halt less than a centimeter from her. She still fell to the ground, probably more out of shock than anything else.
Don't worry, boss. Sensors report that the car made no contact with her.
I leapt out of the car and moved to the little old lady's side. She was crumpled like an old piece of paper. Are you okay, ma'am? Do you want my computer to call an ambulance?
Perhaps.
She reached up and grabbed my throat.
You may need that ambulance for yourself, Sonny.
Boss, this isn't a normal woman.
No kidding. Listen, Granny, I'm giving you 3 nanos to let me go.
Or else what?
1, 2... I moved my left wrist in just the right way to pop the gun from the holster in my sleeve into my hand. Guns certainly aren't my weapon of choice, but this was one of those times when I didn't have much of a choice. As it turned out, I didn't have any choice, as my gun stubbornly refused to come into my hand.
Harv!
It appears that something is jamming the electronic holster release. My assumption is that your adversary is using some kind of nullifier.
Great! Granny tossed me into the air. I crashed to the ground on the other side of the street.
What's going on here?
An old lady is pummeling you.
I know that. I mean, what exactly is this little old lady?
I'm analyzing her now. No matter what, I'm quite certain this incident is something you are not going to want to use in your promo video.
A beam of nearly invisible light emanated from the lens in my eye and scanned the approaching granny. Is she a bot?
No, she's organic, and she has no external energy reading, so she's not wearing a strength augmented device. But her physiology is unlike any I've ever seen. Whatever she is, she's not human.
Good. Then I don't have to go easy on her.
Listen, whatever you are, stop now and go back to wherever you came from, or I'll wipe the floor with you. You got it?
Granny answered with a mean left cross. Now that my guard was up, I saw it coming and easily ducked.
I'll take that as a no.
She shrugged off my uppercut to her jaw.
I almost felt that.
But her lightning-fast right cross to my jaw rocked my head back.
Harv, I need you to pump me up here.
I did on that last one. Her body is semi-pliable, so your punches will have no effect.
Well, this just gets better and better.
Since the mechanism that popped my gun from holster to hand wasn't working, I decided to get my gun the old-fashioned way. I dug my right hand into my left sleeve and pulled the gun from the holster as the granny thing began to charge me. I missed her by a good 3 meters, but she stopped.
Not even close, Sonny. Aren't you a bit young to be losing your eyesight?
I don't shoot well with my right hand. That's why I use computer-guided rounds.
Computer-guided?
The bullet circled around. What the dust? It was a concussive blast, meant only to stun a charging elephant, but the round struck the granny thing and shattered her form into 1,000 shards of white fiber. The pieces sprayed across the street from the force of the blast, but before they could settle, they suddenly started moving across the ground and swirling together.
She's reforming herself, isn't she?
I don't think so.
The pieces didn't take a human shape. They formed the number 77 on the ground, then disintegrated and scattered on the night breeze.
Wow. That was different. Any idea what that was?
Apparently, it was some sort of doppelganger. My assumption is that it was made off-world, and I don't think it liked you.
So I've somehow managed to make aliens mad at me?
You have a way about you. I couldn't tell if the technology was Gladian or Beamian. I could analyze the air around us now for traces of the elements and do further analysis, but that will take some time.
Forget it. We're late enough as it is. Whoever it was who sent that thing, we can't worry about it now.
Ona's mansion was an otherworldly compound in the northern outskirts of New Frisco. It was ultra-chic in every conceivable manner, which in this case meant that it wasn't really there, at least not to the naked eye. We slowly rolled toward a lonely plastic guard post.
What's going on?
We've arrived.
I looked through the light mist that had just picked up and saw nothing but rocks and forbidding wooded hills around us. The guard post sat by a large outcropping of rock where the roadway and hovercraft skyway ended. Beyond this checkpoint was an uninviting mixture of mountain and forest.
Arrived where? Maybe I'm old-fashioned, but I thought that when Onis had come to my mansion, there'd be an actual building.
You are old-fashioned. These are the coordinates that Ms. Thompson's computer provided, and I think you'll find the answers to your questions at the guard post.
I looked at the dilapidated plastic shack as we parked beside it. At first, I saw nothing but darkness through its glassless windows, but as I stared, for the briefest of nanos, I saw a tiny red flash. We've been scanned.
It would appear so.
Greetings, Mr. Johnson. Thank you for coming so promptly.
You're welcome. Although it would have been nice for Miss Thompson to have had a house built for my arrival.
Your humor is acknowledged, although I admit not fully appreciated.
Wouldn't be the first time. Does this mean I'll be porting to another location? Because I have to tell you now, I don't port well.
Not at all, sir. Your identity has been verified by security. You may enter now. I've programmed the pattern for entrance to the grounds into your vehicle's guidance computer. You may proceed at your leisure.
Thank you. Let Miss Thompson know that we'll see her shortly. We slowly moved forward and eased through a fissure in the huge rock outcropping. How come I didn't see the fissure before?
Because it wasn't there when we arrived. The entire area is artificial, a conglomeration of simulacra and holograms. It's the latest in stealth security.
And you're gonna tell me this when?
Either when you asked about it or when you needed to know.
That's comforting. It looks like Ona's computer is quite intelligent.
I'm not surprised. She can afford it.
You don't feel threatened, do you?
Would you feel threatened if she had a pet ape?
Only if it dressed like me. The last of the simulated forest melted away before us, and the car entered Ona Thompson's compound. It was like discovering Atlantis, only a little more ostentatious. The outer layer was a ring of interconnected small buildings, and I use the word small only in relation to everything else, which encircled the centerpiece of the estate, a giant, multi-leveled pyramid made of sparkling metal. If it hadn't been the middle of the night, I think the glare of sunlight off the building would have permanently burnt my retinas. The entire estate was shielded by a translucent force field, but from the inside was a gentle shade of purple, which I'm sure was not coincidentally a perfect match to Ona's complexion. The field shielded the compound from the outside. I'm not sure if this is cool or eerie.
It is a bit pretentious.
I won't go blind if I stare at it for too long, will I?
I can't say for certain. The clinical trial is still in progress.
The computer autopilot took control of our car and brought us slowly toward the main building. Nice pyramid.
Ziggurat.
Gesundheit.
The building is a ziggurat. A pyramid is a structure comprised of a polyhedron base and four straight smooth triangular faces. A ziggurat is a pyramidal structure that is built in successive stages. The pyramid is primarily Egyptian in origin. The ziggurat is Mesopotamian, although similar designs have been found in ancient Aztec and Mayan cultures.
So, nice ziggurat. How much do you think a place like this goes for?
Let's put it this way. On the hover landing pad, the third directional light from the left, that bulb costs more than your house.
Well, it is a nice bulb. I mentioned earlier that Dr. David Thompson was best known for two monumental creations. The first was his four daughters. The second was a little more infamous. The tabloids of the time dubbed it the D-cubed, which trivialized it to no end, but the name seemed to strike a chord with the general public, so it stuck. Thompson himself never formally named the device, but rumor has it that he referred to it as Teoatai, which stood for the end of all that is, which was fitting because what he created was a doomsday device. Very little is actually known about the device, yet legend says that it began with just a theory on Dr. Thompson's part, a hypothesis that a machine could be created that would literally unmake worlds. The theory stayed with him in the shadows of his brilliant mind for months, maybe years, buzzing around like an annoying fly, until he finally gave in to the spark of destructive inspiration and sat down at his computer drawing board to follow it through. Many years later, it was complete. Dr. Thompson had designed a machine that was capable of creating an imitation black hole strong enough to rip apart a planet, reducing it to its atomic skeleton in a matter of minutes. He hadn't actually set out to create a doomsday device. He just followed the wanderings of his brilliant mind and risen to the nearly impossible challenges that it posed. But in the end, there it was, the design for an honest-to-goodness end-it-all device. That's the problem with scientists. The thrill of the invention often stops them from thinking through the consequences of their actions. They never stop to think, hey, there might be some potential to misuse this doomsday device, so maybe it's not such a hot idea to invent it. I blame it on lack of sex. Needless to say, when word of the device's existence reached the ears of the World Council, they were none too pleased.
They feared that the plans would fall into the wrong hands. And truthfully, when you're talking about an actual Doomsday device, any hands are the wrong ones. So, for one of the few times in its history, the World Council acted quickly. First, they set out to verify the existence and functionality of the D-Cubed. But they didn't want any one person to gaze upon the complete plans for fear that the knowledge would stick in their mind. So they dispatched a team of 25 of the best scientists to examine Dr. Thompson's designs. Each scientist was given only 4% of the blueprint to analyze, so as not to learn too much about the device. The scientists confirmed, as much as they could, that each component that they had individually examined was viable and potentially functional. The D-Cubed itself might indeed be real. So, when faced with the existence of a potential threat to the entire world and all humanity, they did what any good capitalist government would do. They threw money at it. The World Council, with the backing and support of the world's largest corporations, pooled its resources and made Dr. Thompson an offer he couldn't refuse. They paid him more money than had ever been paid before in the history of history to not build the device, and the conditions of the deal were that he had to destroy all copies of the plans for the D-Cubed, including the ones in his head. Dr. Thompson agreed. He destroyed all work referring to the D-Cubed and then voluntarily underwent a minor surgical procedure where doctors removed the small portion of his brain that contained the theory and plans for the D-Cubed. Looking back, you really have to admire the guy's bravery. He was, after all, being asked to undergo a partial lobotomy, but he did so willingly. His actual words upon hearing the World Council's offer/demand, which were netcast live around the world, were simply this:
"As you wish."
The whole tumultuous period was probably best captured in a single photo, taken in the hallway of the hospital a few minutes before Dr. Thompson underwent his surgery. In the image, Thompson is hugging the quads, who were 5 years old at the time. He is kneeling, head bowed, eyes closed. One arm is around Tua, the other is around Thria. Ona is hugging him from behind. But it's his embrace with Fora that is most poignant. Her tiny body faces him, her arms are at her sides. Like her father, Fora's eyes are closed, her head down, gently resting against the bowed head of her father. The poignancy of their expressions made the image an icon, forever ingrained in the pop culture psyche of the era. Anyway, the operation was a success, and Dr. Thompson, now a fabulously wealthy man, went back to his home, his daughters, and his work, and was supposed to live happily ever after. Unfortunately, it didn't turn out that way. The brain surgery left Dr. Thompson brilliant, but somewhat addled. He had constant lapses in memory and developed some odd physical tics. He retreated more and more into a secluded lab, ignoring his daughters and burying himself in his work. 5 years later, he died tragically in a lab explosion. And then, things really got interesting. By the time of Dr. Thompson's death, the quads were on the cusp of maturity. They were brilliant but bored superhuman preteens, and as mentioned, each sister, in an effort to distinguish herself, had developed her own distinct and personal style. With their father's death, they were left with an immense fortune, but without a guiding parent, and that's where the troubles really began. It seems that Dr. Thompson's familial memory skills were one of the casualties of the brain surgery that excised the D-Cubed knowledge from his brain. As a result, when he rewrote his will not long before his death, he apparently forgot that he had four children and left his entire fortune to the only child he remembered, Ona. So Ona inherited everything. And thus began one of the most infamous and long-running displays of civil litigation in modern history. Tua and Thria, each only 10 years old, sued Ona, claiming that they were each due one quarter of the estate. Fora filed suit, claiming that she wanted no part of the estate. Tua and Thria then filed additional suit, saying that they were now due one third of the estate. Ona, meanwhile, having more than enough money to defend herself, hired nearly 15% of all the attorneys left in the world after the great lawyer purge, and stalled the suits in every conceivable way. The legal battles have been running now for over a dozen years. It's worth noting that even without a share of their father's fortune, both Tua and Thria have managed to earn tidy livings from their celebrity status. Both of them are Holovision stars. Tua's adventures as a superhero and crime fighter are recorded and netcast 3 nights a week on the Entercorp True Crime site. Thria hosts a weekly Meditations with a Fairy Queen show on the Fantasy site, where she spends an hour showing off different parts of her mystical fairy realm and answering relationship questions. Fora has done her best to stay out of the public eye, to the extent that such a thing is possible for a Thompson Quad. She lives in New Vegas and preaches about the evils of wealth and the material world to anyone who will listen, which pretty much scares away most interviewers. Still, she's garnered a bit of a following, and her lectures are a popular attraction on most New Vegas tours. We were pulling into a parking area that looked as though it had recently been constructed just for my car. What about the legal battle, Harv? Has anything happened there lately?
The plethora of claims and counterclaims continues within the courts. There had been some rumors that the Quads were negotiating a settlement sans their attorneys, but those have been officially denied by all parties.
Which means, of course, that they're probably true.
Probably.
A settlement would certainly be big news. The end of an era. I wonder if that's why we're here.
To witness the settlement? I don't think so, boss. You're a private eye, not a notary public.
Thank Gates for that.
I understand they do get far fewer attempts on their lives.
Where's the fun in that? We parked and were ushered into the main mansion by the polite, bodiless voice of the computer. As usual, for the duration of our visit, Harv would mostly communicate with me either by whispering silently in my head, or when stealth and silence weren't priorities, through the traditional interface that I wear on my wrist. Very few people in the world know that Harv is hardwired directly into my head. The secret has helped me out on a number of occasions, so I like to keep it as quiet as possible. Plus, if truth be told, it's not something I brag about, or even like to think about too much.
Thank you again for coming so quickly, Mr. Johnson. Miss Thompson is awaiting you in the Great Dining Room, number 7B. If you'll permit me, I shall vocally escort you to your destination.
That'll be fine, thank you. The computer led us through Ona's mansion, and I was grateful to have the guidance, because I'd never have found my way without it.
We've arrived. I've alerted Miss Thompson, so please feel free to enter.
Thanks. I appreciate your help.
It was my pleasure serving you, sir.
Well, it's about time you showed up.
The space was a formal dining room, sumptuously elegant and, not surprisingly, enormous. All four Quads were there, and none of them appeared to be what one would call happy. Ona stood by the table, arms crossed. Tua, the superhero, was beside her, hovering about a half a meter off the ground. She was in full costume, a tight red crop top, white miniskirt, red boots with four-inch heels, and a long blue cape. Thria, the fairy queen, was in the background just a little, away from the table, as though she'd been pacing before I entered. Her long green robe danced around her gently, as though moved by a breeze, which I couldn't feel. Two tiny nymphs flittered around her head, sparkling with pixie-like glitter. She was crying, and she had those heroically strong, tear-stained cheeks that you read about so often in fantasy fiction. But it was Fora who embodied the trouble. She was wearing a thick black faux leather jacket and gloves, a short skirt and black tights. Had the room been any darker, I wouldn't have been able to see her at all, she was so shadowy. She was the only one of the Quads who didn't look angry or overwrought. As a matter of fact, she looked rather content. But that didn't help matters much, because she was also lying dead on the floor.
As you can see, I have a problem.
I knelt beside Fora and gently put my hand on her neck, being careful not to disturb anything. Her skin was slightly cold to the touch. I knew she was gone, but Harv scanned her through the subtle contact of my fingertip.
No pulse, boss. No breath. Her body's cooled a bit already. She's been dead for an hour at least.
Fora's expression was sadly serene, yet beautiful in a quiet way. Her skin was unpainted and unblemished. The beauty that was fast fading with death was all natural. Her hair, however, was something less than natural. Fora had dyed her hair the deepest shade of black I'd ever seen within the Earth's atmosphere. There were puddles of red wine on the marble floor where she lay. One was near her mouth, and a few tiny droplets still clung to her lips, like dark berries on a bush. Another encircled her hand like a bloody pond around a delicate purple island. Her hand was palmed down and cupped ever so slightly into a subtle dome. Her hand looks a little strange. You know? It's almost like she's doing a card trick.
A what?
It's like she's palming something. I wonder...
Boss, don't touch it!
I gently lifted her hand from the puddle without thinking. The first of my many mistakes during the investigation. There were symbols drawn in wine beneath her hand.
Fora had cupped her hand gently around them before she died, not to hide them from sight, but to keep them from being erased by the puddle of wine that had formed. By lifting her hand, I had removed the dam, and the wine puddle rushed past its unnatural banks. The symbols disappeared.
Oh, Tweet. That was probably important.
The last thing Miss Thompson wrote before her death? Yes, I would suspect so.
You recorded it, right, Hart?
Of course I did. I'm analyzing it now.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Do me a favor. Next time I start to do something stupid like that, just stop me.
You have no idea how I've longed to hear you say that.
I turned to Ona. What happened?
Isn't it obvious? Someone tried to kill me.
I moved away from the body, being careful not to disturb anything else on the scene. Actually, Miss Thompson, that's not obvious. It looks to me more like someone succeeded in killing your sister.
Oh, good. You see, that's the kind of top-notch deductive reasoning that I was looking for when I hired you. Ugh! I'm looking beyond the obvious. Think outside the cube. This was an attempt on my life!
Tua floated toward us, hands majestically upon her hips, her cape somehow flapping in a wind that wasn't there.
Oh, yes, Ona. It's always about you.
She landed beside me and held out a red-gloved hand. Her grip was firm, but not uncomfortable. Still, my hand felt like an egg held gently in an atomic vise. It was unnerving and kind of sexy at the same time.
I'm Tua Thompson, Mr. Johnson. You can call me Justice, babe. It's nice to meet a fellow soldier in the battle for justice. Should I cue the music now, or did you bring your own? You're just jealous that I have a catchy theme song and you don't.
The two looked as though they could have gone at it there and then. But while that would certainly make for an entertaining pay-per-view special, it wouldn't be all that helpful to me at the Nano. Nice to meet you, Justice, babe. Thria stood daintily on the other side of the table.
Please, sister, cease your bickering. A great tragedy has befallen us. We should be drawing strength from one another rather than letting our grief tear us asunder.
Thria's gown flowed around her mellifluously as she moved to join her sisters. The two tiny nymphs flitted about her head, leaving trails of sparkling pixie dust behind as they flew.
You are right, mistress. You are divine, mistress.
You are much prettier and smarter than your sisters.
Thus speaketh Guinevere and her sycophant mosquitoes. This is all I need.
I refuse to acknowledge your inferred insult, sister. I know that it is born of grief and fear.
It's born of annoyance, you unicorn kisser. Now can we please get back to the attempt on my life? Can you, for just one nano, think of something other than yourself?
And what's the point of that?
Why, you
peace
arrogant—
Peace and harmony, sisters! Peace and harmony!
What are you gonna do, punch me? I ought to. You're no less contemptible than some of the criminals I lock up. Just try it, Justice Boob!
Ladies!
Do you sleep in that stupid costume? Of course I do. When crime rears its evil head, every nano counts.
I popped my gun into my hand. Just noise. The gun's OLED screen flashed in recognition.
How about when good taste rears its fashionable head? You look ridiculous!
Sisters, please!
How dare you! I'm going to—
I understand that you're all dealing with this in your own ways, but I think we need to go over the basics here. Your sister is dead.
Brilliant observation.
And unless I'm mistaken, Miss Thompson, you have hired me to help you. Now, in order to do that, I'm going to need to know exactly what happened. So let's start at the beginning.
You mean when the great goddess brought forth the infant cosmos from the infinity of her womb?
No. Let's fast forward a few billion years to what happened tonight.
We were meeting for dinner. A late dinner. Hors d'oeuvres served in the drawing room at midnight, the first course to be served at 1. After-hours dinners will be in vogue this year. The trend should become fashionable any nano.
So the four of you met for dinner?
Yes. We were about to sit for the first course. Ona opened a bottle of wine.
Romani Conte, 1990. Only 4 bottles of which remain in the world. 3 of them are currently in my cellar. The 4th, unfortunately, is puddling on the floor.
Sister Ona poured us each a glass. We raised our drinks in a show of sisterly unity.
Then Ona started talking about her wealth.
I was giving a toast.
You were describing your fortune.
And Sister Thora grew impatient.
Always the rebel.
And rude.
She couldn't take Ona's rambling anymore and took a drink, just to get the toast over with.
And that was it?
She collapsed, rolled around for a while, then died.
Poison in the wine.
Another flash of insightful deduction.
The police are going to want to run tests on the wine when they get here. Whatever's left in Fora's glass, as well as what's in the bottle.
The police aren't coming.
What?
That's why I called you. I don't want this to turn into a public spectacle. I want it handled in-house. This is a family matter.
Miss Thompson, your sister's most likely been murdered. That means it's a police matter as well. We'll keep it as quiet as possible, but you need to report this to the authorities.
Absolutely not.
It's a crime if you don't.
It happened under my roof, and that makes it under my sovereignty and subject to my laws. And my laws say that whatever I say goes.
Well, that would be true if you were your own country, but unfortunately, you're a citizen of the new Frisco Principality. And as such, you're subject to its laws.
You mean even after everything I've done for this world? After all the good that I've created with my wealth? Aiding underprivileged children? Funding medical research? Driving programs for environmental renewal and reinvention? After devoting my vast fortune to raising the quality of life for every downtrodden person in the first through fourth worlds? I still have to obey these silly new Frisco laws?
Well, yes.
But I'm really, really rich!
Okay then, maybe not all of the laws apply to you. But I'm pretty sure about the ones regarding murders that take place in your pyramid.
Ziggurat.
I mean, Ziggurat.
I'll say this one more time, Zachary, and then the conversation will be over. We are not calling the police.
Well then, Ona, I guess we have a problem.
Excuse me, Ms. Ona.
What is it? Can't you see I'm browbeating a minion?
I believe that this debate is about to be rendered moot, because the new Frisco police are currently on their way.
What? Who notified them?
That would be me.
What?
I apologize. It seemed like the right thing to do.
When will they be here?
Within 3 minutes.
Fine. Make sure the security systems let them through. Let's not cause any more trouble. I guess you get your wish after all, Zach.
Believe me, Ona, this is the last thing I'd wish for.
And by the way, I don't like butting heads with my minions.
I don't break the law, Ona, and I'm not a minion.
Not yet. Well, ladies, hang on to your hats. It's going to be a bumpy ride.
When we met the police in the foyer, I saw that my old friend, Captain Tony Rickey, was the lead officer. Tony and I were neighbors growing up. We have a long history together and continue to be the closest friends, which is a good thing because I tend to get him into all sorts of trouble. Tony had his police team with him and I had a client with me, so we just nodded to one another and cut to the chase.
Zach? Where's the body?
In the dining room, Tony. I'll show you the way. Ona Thompson, Captain Tony Rickey, New Frisco Police.
I'm pleased to meet you, Miss Thompson. I'm sorry for your loss.
Ona took Tony's hand gently and gave him a soft smile that sent tingles up my spine.
Thank you, Captain. I appreciate your coming so quickly.
She touched Tony's arm like a grieving widow drawing support from a friend.
We're here to help, Miss Thompson.
Please. Call me Ona.
All right, Ona.
He patted her shoulder gently, and I smiled at the kind way he calmed her fears. I began to feel better about the situation.
Don't fall for it, boss.
Huh?
She's emanating a high concentration of pheromones. That's what's giving you the warm and fuzzy feeling.
Pheromones?
She's oozing sex, boss. She's charming, Captain Rickey.
She can do that?
It's one of the many extra-normal abilities the Quads possess, although this one isn't listed in their press materials.
She's a devious one, our Ona. A damn sexy, devious one, though. I looked at Tony. Ona was manipulating him, and I don't like anybody except me doing that.
Excuse me, Captain Rickey. The body is this way?
Lead the way.
Ona gave me a slight smile as Tony moved away. I turned, and we all walked together down the hallway.
You working for Ona Thompson now?
I'm an old friend of the family.
As of when?
About an hour now. Ona brought me in to help her out.
Does that mean she wants you to find the killer or just make certain that she gets off?
I'll let you know when I find out.
That would certainly make my life easier.
And we entered the scene of the crime. A few minutes later, while the CSI team was fine-toothing the murder scene with their plethora of high-tech combs, I sat with Ona as she spoke with Tony.
And you're certain that no one else had access to the wine before it was served?
Well, if it turns out that the wine was poisoned, then clearly someone else did, Captain.
Ona, I'm going to say for the fourth time, if I'm remembering correctly, that you should have one of your attorneys here. I hate attorneys as much as the next guy, but they do at times have a purpose.
Duly noted, Zach. But I don't think that's necessary. I have nothing to hide. Captain Rickey and I both want the same thing here, don't we, Captain?
That's right, Ona.
She's doing the pheromone trick again.
Ona? Who else was in the house during the hours leading up to the death?
Myself and my sisters, of course. And my butler.
Your butler?
Winter Crescent Haven Shiver Shimshaw Jameson.
I'm sorry?
Winter Crescent Haven Shiver Shimshaw Jameson.
Would you spell that for me?
I'd rather not. It's late. You can call him W. We all do. He's the last descendant of several famous butler bloodlines, or something like that. He was Daddy's butler, originally.
He runs the household?
Gates, no. W is extremely old, slightly senile, and totally incompetent in most matters. The computer takes care of household matters. I employ W out of a sense of tradition. Sentimental, I know. But he's been with us for so long. I have to say, though, that no one sets a finer table or serves a better tea. It's a gift, really.
I'll need to speak with him, if you don't mind.
Oh, feel free.
Any other human staff?
My security designers, Sturm and Drong Fauen.
They're related?
They're identical twin cousins. They're absolute wizards when it comes to home security systems and related applications. The best of the best, I'm told. Although this is going to look very bad on their resumes, I must say.
Twin cousins?
Absolutely identical. It's a medical anomaly known as the Patty Duke syndrome. Geneticists and medical scholars were always begging them to take part in one study or another. They did the first few for free. Then they began requiring compensation.
We'll need to speak with them as well.
They weren't at the mansion tonight. They had the night off.
You gave your security people the night off on the same night that your three sisters were visiting?
Well, I suppose it sounds suspicious if you're going to put it that way. The security systems were fully engaged during the entire evening. The mansion is like a fortress, as you've seen. And my sisters are capable of taking care of themselves. Or so I thought.
Was there anyone else in the mansion?
There's Opie, of course.
Opie?
Yes, the silverback mountain gorilla that Daddy genetically enhanced before my sisters and I were born.
Opie's a monkey?
He's a gorilla, Captain. He's very sensitive about his genus.
Is he a pet?
I wonder if he dresses like you.
As I mentioned, Zack, Opie was genetically enhanced by my father. He was a precursor to the experiment that created my sisters and me. He has an IQ well above the normal human average and has degrees in several fields of study, none of which, however, bear any relevance to the real world or making a living, so he continues to live with me here at the mansion.
Does he harbor any ill feelings towards you or your sisters?
Oh, who knows? His kind can be fairly irrational.
Apes?
Males.
Excuse me, Captain?
What is it, Weber?
We have a situation in the other room, sir.
What kind of situation?
One of Miss Thompson's sisters is requesting a lawyer.
Then she's entitled to one.
Well, she's not exactly the one asking.
What do you mean? She's either asking or she's not.
You better take a look, sir. It's, sort of a legal gray area.
Tony and I followed Weber into the sitting room across the hallway, where his partner was trying to get a statement from Thria. The problem was that it wasn't Thria who was asking for a lawyer. It was one of her nymphs.
Should I spell it for you, troglodytes, or do you need me to paint you a picture in the mystical mists? A lawyer! A mouthpiece! We want legal representation!
Le Fay, hush now. These gentlemen are just trying to help.
The 6-inch-high, silver-skinned nymphs stood on the table in front of Thria. Both were slightly plump and a little long of nose. One wore a mini-dress that looked as though it was made from silver-tinted deerskin. The other had on a frilly nightgown-like frock that was tattered at the edges, the new peasant look. They each had tiny knives in their belt, and one had a tiny bow and arrow quiver slung over her shoulders.
They're trying to frame you, mistress!
Miss Thompson!
Not another word, oppressor, or you'll get righteously slapped with a harassment suit, and then cast into the fifth circle of the netherworld with the rest of your Y-chromosome-carrying brethren! Yeah! You've probably thrown our poor sister nymph to your dogs already!
See what I mean, Captain? Miss Thompson's not lawyering up, but her companions are rather insistent.
Miss Thompson, are you requesting legal representation?
Of course she is, you troll! Do you understand English, or do you want us to draw you a grip?
Please, Lefee. I apologize for my familiars, Captain. I don't control them. I'm not requesting counsel. I'll help you in any way that I can.
Don't listen to her! She's in shock! She's not responsible for her actions! She wants a team of lawyers, and she wants them now!
Tony looked at Thria, then he looked at the nymphs who fluttered angry and defiant just above the table.
I'll be with you in just a nano, Miss Thompson.
Take your time, Captain.
Hey! Get your hairy male butt back here! Yeah! Our mistress's taxes pay your salary!
Tony turned toward Weber and me. The three of us huddled together and conferred quietly.
Thria herself clearly said that she didn't want a lawyer.
But the things won't shut up about it.
Then let the nymphs lawyer up. You can interview Thria separately.
The nymphs are her familiars. They never leave her.
Never?
We have to get her a lawyer.
But Thria said that she didn't want a lawyer.
What if some judge decides that the nymphs are extensions of her person or something crazy like that. She could make the claim that we denied her a lawyer.
That's crazy.
Welcome to the world of the Thompson Quads. There are no rules here. This whole scene could be a trick to get whatever Thria says here declared inadmissible.
Excuse me, but I don't see how the three of you huddling up in some latent homosexual bonding formation is going to get my mistress a lawyer!
So, allow us to put this in terms that you'll understand. If you don't get legal assistance on the vid by the time we count to three in Celtic, then Mistress Thria is riding the Miss Doorway out of your hairy arms' clutches!
Yeah! And if you and your brethren oppressors try to stop her, she will bring all the power of Gaia's heaven down upon your forward-sloping skulls! You just...
At that nano, a heavy metal ice bucket clanked down over the two nymphs. Tony Webber and I turned to see Tua standing proudly over the bucket, her delicately powerful fist holding it in place.
Trust me, this is the only way to deal with these things. I think my sister will answer your questions now. Isn't that right, sister?
Of course.
We let the detectives handle the interview with Thria. Tony and I went back to the dining room to check on CSI. I could tell that Tony wanted some privacy, so I walked a few feet away and looked at some of the artwork in the hallway. One painting in particular that caught my eye was of a pale-faced woman wearing a flowing, fur-trimmed robe of ebony and blood red. Her face was turned to the side, seductively hidden from the viewer. Her image was flat, a stylized mixture of realism and the abstract, with big shoulders and a trim waist. She was both sensual and haunting at once.
It's Erte.
Pardon me?
I apologize for intruding, sir. I saw you staring at the painting. It's an original Erte. The late Dr. Thompson was very fond of his work.
It's nice.
Russian-born painter Roman de Tirtov called himself Erte after the French pronunciation of his initials. He was one of the foremost fashion and stage designers of the early 20th century and painted for nearly 40 years. He is the father of what is now known as Art Deco, and his work, as you can no doubt see, has had tremendous influence on today's styles of fashion, architecture, and interior design.
I appreciate the information.
The pleasure was mine.
And it was at that nano that the evening took yet another strange turn.
Zach, CSI has found something.
Is it new evidence?
Sort of.
Sort of?
It's new evidence, but it might also be another crime. We found another body.
At the far end of the dining room, we joined three other investigators who were huddled in a corner.
A trail of wine ran across the floor and went behind the cupboard. We moved the cupboard aside and found the body behind it.
Behind the cupboard? The investigators parted, and we saw the body, if you could call it that, on the floor. It was small, all right, about 6 inches from head to toe. It was also silver-skinned and winged. So that's what one looks like when it's not talking.
It's soaked. Is that wine?
That's what we assume. It might have been poisoned as well.
Or it might have just fallen into a full glass and drowned.
Bag it. We'll have the coroner run the tests.
What is it, Tony? Evidence or another victim?
I have no idea. We'll figure it out later. I sincerely hope your client is innocent, Zach.
Why is that?
Because we'll have a hell of a time putting her on trial if she isn't. When was the last time you saw a celebrity convicted of anything?
What say we cooperate on this one, Tony? Share information as we get it.
Can't do it, Zach. You're working for a potential suspect.
She's one of several possible suspects right now. She's cooperating with the investigation. Heck, she might even be a potential victim in all this.
We're gonna look at her. You know that.
I understand. But I'm gonna be looking at everything else. I might find something that'll be useful to you.
You mean something that will clear your client?
Something like that would be nice.
Then I'm sure you'll be very diligent in delivering that information to us.
Look, I'm not asking to sit in on every interview and meeting. All I'm asking is for a heads up on the breaking news.
Tony looked away and gently shook his head. He does this a lot around me. I try not to take it personally.
All right. You give me every bit of relevant information you find in this, and I'll keep you in the loop. But only until Ona is charged. Then you're cut off.
You mean if Ona's charged?
If or when.
It's a deal. Thanks, Tony.
Don't mention it. And I mean that. Don't mention this to anyone. I get enough heat from the commissioner for just admitting I know you.
He's just jealous. Tony shook his head again and rejoined his CSI team.
Aren't you going to tell Captain Ricky about the symbols we found beneath Forrest's hand?
Not yet. Not until I figure out what they mean.
Concealing evidence. Oh, good. Your first felony of the evening.
Not concealing, just delaying, Harv. The good news is this night couldn't get any worse.
Ah, tempting fate as usual. And that would be your risk communicator.
Who would be calling at this hour of the morning?
It's Carol.
What could she possibly want?
I suggest you ask her yourself.
I raised the risk communicator to my face, just as the image of my part-time receptionist, Carol, popped into the screen, looking far more chipper and alert than any normal human has a right to at 5 a.m. But then, although Carol is many things, normal isn't one of them. To begin with, she's Electra's niece, which makes me sort of her uncle-in-law. And like her aunt, she's strikingly beautiful. When she's not working for me, she's at New Caltech working on her degree in biophysics. She's also a very powerful psi, short for psionic, class 1 level 6, which means that she has all kinds of mental powers. She can read thoughts, move things with her mind, and project her thoughts into other people's minds as well, making them do whatever she wants. Don't tell me you want to take another day off. You've been doing that a lot lately.
Just checking in.
It's 5 a.m, Carol.
Yes, Theo, I'm a senior now. I can tell time.
It was clear that she had something she wanted to say, and I could tell she wasn't sure how to say it.
I just wanted to make sure you were all right.
I'm fine.
I had a bad feeling, that's all.
Well, as you can see, I'm perfectly fine, so... Wait a nano. You haven't developed precog abilities, have you?
No, it was intuition rather than precognition.
That's a relief.
I guess it was a false alarm then.
Well, even psis make mistakes once in a while. I'm fine, really, I am. And I should be getting back to business now.
Okay, I'll see you when you come in.
Well, that was different. Even for Carol.
It seems her powers are growing on a daily basis.
As I went back to the dining room, I glanced over at the Arte painting that I'd noticed earlier. Something about it caught my eye.
By the way, don't let Miss Thompson's computer catch you staring at the painting again. It's likely to give you another one of its Arte lectures. That thing is even more boring than you are.
Huh.
Boss, you're getting that far-off and unfocused look on your face again. That means you've either had a revelation about the case, or that you ate a bad burrito.
We need to find Ona. We found Ona in the drawing room, fidgeting with her jewelry. A couple of Tony's officers were keeping her company, and for some reason they were doing the old Freaky Geeky. The Freaky Geeky is a dance that became popular about 20 years ago, where people wiggle their fingers as though they're typing on a keyboard as they spin around on one leg while shaking the other. It's totally ridiculous, which means that it's a staple at weddings, graduations, and divorce parties the world over. What did you do to them?
It's a trick my sisters and I used to play on people.
Make them stop!
I was bored.
Your sister was murdered tonight. You're playing with the minds of the police doesn't reflect well on your innocence. Now stop it!
All right, all right.
The two officers stopped dancing and came to their senses. They looked at one another, their arms still in the typing position. And then they uncomfortably turned away and straightened their uniform shirts. Excuse me, officers. I'd like a few nanos alone with my client, please.
I'm sorry, Mr. Johnson, but Captain Ricky told us to keep an eye on her.
I turned to Ona and gave her a look. Ona looked at the guards.
Leave us alone.
You got it.
So it's okay for me to use my pheromones when it's to your advantage.
You're treading a fine line here, Ona. You've got to be careful.
Why? I'm rich.
All the more reason. People love to see the rich fall. Now, I need you to be honest with me.
Of course.
Did you kill your sister? She stared at me for a long, angry nano, trying very hard, it seemed, to melt me with her vision.
No, I didn't.
Are you sure?
Positive.
I looked at her carefully, searching for any of the telltale facial tics or changes of expression that show when a person is lying. I didn't detect anything. Harv also scrolled her heart rate and respiration in front of my eyes. It was a little lower than a normal human's would have been, but I assumed that was normal for a superhuman. If Ona was lying, then she was a master liar. Good. Call your computer in here.
I don't need to.
I know, but do it anyway.
Computer?
Yes, Miss Thompson?
Computer, you've been kind of quiet since the police arrived.
I am programmed to be discreet. I only make my presence known when needed.
Yet you lectured me on Arte.
I thought you would find it interesting. I hope I didn't disturb you.
You were watching me.
Not specifically you, sir. I monitor the household. I am constantly tracking millions of details.
So you were watching the dining room when Fora died?
Yes, I was.
You recorded it, didn't you?
Surely not. It doesn't record everything we do.
Of course it does. It's a security system. Correct, computer? You do record everything. Isn't that right, computer?
Yes.
So you've seen me naked?
Ona, can we stay on subject here? Your computer is going to replay Fora's death for us. Isn't that right, computer?
If Ms. Thompson wishes.
Ona?
Whatever.
Then kindly turn your attention to the wall screen on your right. How long before Ms. Fora's death would you like me to begin?
5 minutes will do for a start. I'll let you know if I want to go back farther.
As you wish.